This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks.
It's Saturday Night Live with Fred Armisen, Rachel Dratch.
When Rachel Dratch joined the cast of Saturday Night Live in the late 90s, the show was already in the midst of a minor revolution. It was featuring more women comedians than it had since the 70s, and by the time Dratch got there, so had Tina Fey, Amy Poehler, and Maya Rudolph. And with them, SNL got smarter, edgier, and more fearless about female comedy, as in this sketch from 2005.
What's in all this bag?
All my spring break necessity tatas. This one has cash, my Dr. Seuss hat, and a poncho in case I fall asleep on the street.
ATE Airlines Flight 59 to Cancun, now boarding.
All right, bye, Mom. Bye, Dad. Thanks for driving us.
Yeah. Have a great time. And remember, young lady.
Dad, I know.
Live from New York, it's Saturday night.
Rachel Dratch grew up in Lexington, Massachusetts. She graduated from Dartmouth College and then spent 4 years with Chicago's Second City comedy troupe before joining SNL in 1999. Dratch left the show in 2006, and she's now performing in Celebrity Autobiography, a live stage show that will be in Boston on Monday. I spoke with Rachel Dratch yesterday about the somber and surprising turns her life has taken since Saturday Night Live. Rachel Dratch, welcome to Radio Boston.
Hi. I feel like I've arrived. I don't think I've ever been on NPR before.
Really?
I'm not sure, but I don't think I have.
That seems like
I feel like I have to
surprise.
Get all intellectual now. And use my NPR voice like this.
Well, Rachel, I wonder if we could start with some of your work, your most famous work from SNL. I mean, you've done so many characters, but a few of them really just became icons. So we've got a clip here. The character really doesn't need an introduction, but it's from a show in 2004 that was hosted by Luke Wilson. So let's listen.
Hey, do you guys think the Pilgrims brought a bottle of Pinot Grigio to the first Thanksgiving?
I'll tell you what the Pilgrims did bring. Smallpox. It killed scores of Native Americans, ravaging their population. And that was before we got around to shattering their spirit.
So that's Rachel Dratch as, of course,
Debbie Downer.
Rachel, how did you come up with that character?
It just kind of popped into my head. And, like, that's the thing. One thing about coming up with characters for SNL is the best ones kind of just, you know, do that. They just kind of appear to you. Because when you're sitting there on writing night and it's, like, 3 a.m, and you're like, I'm going to come up with a character now. It never, ever works. So you sort of have to hope for just the muses to visit you. And you never know when that's going to happen. But then I had the idea. Then I wrote it up with one of the writers there, Paula Pell. And at first we were trying to set it in an office. And it just wasn't quite working. And then we realized we have to set it somewhere really happy. So we put the first one in Disney World. And then it kind of just took off. And those little trombone noises, like, we were just joking around. One, every time we'd say a downer, we'd make that big noise. And we were cracking up at it. And then Paula was like, let's just put that in the scene. So then it got laughs at the table. And then that's how you get the scene on the show.
That's so interesting because the whole wah wah. I mean, there were T-shirts that just had like that word,
really?
Those words wah wah on it, and like a picture of you as Debbie Downer because everyone knew about it. And it's so funny because that sound is to me, it felt like a throwback, like a way throwback to old comedy sketches.
Yeah, it probably was, and it, you know, we didn't mean to, but yeah.
Did you think it would work as well as it did?
Yeah, people always come up to me and they're like, I work with someone like that, or my mom's like that, or whatever. So it seems to, people kind of seem to know someone like this.
So, Rachel, Debbie Downer is just like one of the many characters that you have that people know very well. Another one, of course, since we are in Massachusetts, I've got to ask you about, and that is the Boston Teens, where you play Denise. And before we talk about it, let's listen to a little clip. Here is one where you and Jimmy Fallon are the Boston Teens, and Johnny Mosley, the American skier, was the host that night on SNL, and you're on a particular ski trip. So let's listen.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
But people call me the Devastator.
The Devastator. That would be a great name for Denise, because she has devastated my trip.
I'm the Devastator. You've got a wicked lot of nerve. I fell asleep on the bus ride up here. Sully took it upon himself to draw this Amish beard on my face. As a sign of his love and respect for me.
Dude,
Dude, you look like Abraham Lincoln.
I thought you'd think it was funny.
It was a Sharpie!
Rachel, did you think that Boston accents would be so, well, so continuously hilarious on SNL?
You know, they are to me, and they are to people from Boston, but it's funny. People from the rest of the country are sometimes like, I like those New Jersey teens. Like, some people just didn't even know. But anyway, I always conjure up high school experiences, like the high school ski trip, that one.
And you went to Lexington High School, right?
I did. I went to Lexington High School, yeah. Which a lot of people think, like, Lexington, people don't talk like that in Lexington. But they do, or they did when I was growing up there. I don't know what it's like now, but there were a lot of people with the accent there hanging out in the smoking area. There was also a smoking area back then,
yeah,
just to show you how long ago that was.
Growing up in Lexington and in Massachusetts, did you think that you were going to go into comedy?
No, I mean, as a matter of fact, that was sort of, well, I can't try that. It's too out there, you know. But I always did school plays and, you know, summer theater things and stuff like that. I was sort of gravitated towards comedy, and then I started doing improv in college, and then after college I was like, okay, I'm going to at least try this. We had gone to Second City to check it out, and then I thought, okay, I got to at least give it a shot, and then I can go back to the burbs of Boston and be a therapist.
It seems really fascinating to me because the Boston teens, or at least a version of it, you and Tina Fey did back when you were in Second City.
Yeah, we did it at Second City. It's funny because Tina and Jimmy both have such good Boston accents, but I think it's so hard to do if you're not really from there. Yeah, Tina and I did it as a mother and daughter shopping at the Burlington Mall, and the scene was called Wicked.
We've got a little bit of tape from that Wicked sketch.
Oh, cool. You used to watch hockey with me, didn't you?
Yeah, you swear too much.
The neighborhood children enjoy it.
Yeah. Hey, Matt, can we stop off at Friendly's on the way home? I got a wicked craving for a fribble.
Jesus Christ, Debbie, you just had 10 pieces of cheese and Hickory Farms.
Matt, you're going to give me a negative body image, all right? Seriously, 7 out of 10 teenage girls have a negative body image.
Yeah, well, 6 of them girls are right.
Rachel Dratch, did you write that sketch?
Well, Tina and I wrote it together. We kind of came at Second City, you'd come up with scenes through improv, so we would just keep doing it over and over and, like, adding different stuff, cutting different stuff. And so that's how it works there. At SNL, you're sitting in front of a computer, which I always found much harder.
And so tell me a little bit more about your time at SNL. I mean, as we mentioned, it did seem like such a great run for female comedians on the show. Did it feel that way to you when you were on the program?
Yeah, kind of. But then on the other hand, like, people kind of forget that right before I got there was Molly Shannon and Anna Gasteyer and Sherry O'Terry. So it was already pretty strong, like, when I got there. But yeah, you know, I know I've heard that, like, over and over, oh, is it hard for women there? And when I was there, it definitely was not. I mean, I think maybe back in the day it was, so I'm not trying to take away from anyone's struggle. But I was there with a pretty civilized and evolved gang of guys, and you know, I never felt like, oh, it's because I'm a woman that I'm not on the show tonight or whatever. Like, you didn't really look at it as, like, the girls and the guys, you know, so.
Well, before we stop talking about SNL, I've just got to play one more clip. This is you and Anna Gasteyer, and I'm going to get my best NPR voice on now, hosting our favorite program on SNL. Okay. Here it is.
We have a new co-host here on The Delicious Dish, and she's a real firecracker. Say hi, Lynn.
Hi.
Now, of course, those of you listening in Northeast Minnesota already know Lynn from her last show, Use Your Noodle. Such a groundbreaking show, Lynn. I loved it.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
You know, Wayzata Tribune called it the most innovative, publicly supported pasta-related radio cooking show since Get Ready, Get Set Spaghetti.
Absolutely.
I think we may have actually had reviews like that about the program at some time in our lives. But, okay, so I've always wanted to ask someone who's done one of those sketches on SNL, did you listen to NPR before you decided to make your voices that way?
I have to, you know, put the what out to Molly Shannon, because that was actually, like, she and Anna did that character for years. Now, when Molly left, they let me sit in. So, I mean, I just kind of stepped into that. Yeah, you know, actually, the funny thing is we did an NPR sketch at Second City as well, sort of simultaneously. And I don't know, NPR is just kind of in the back of my mind. I didn't, like, actively listen to it, but you kind of can just call that up when you want to.
We've talked about your 7 great years on SNL and all the great characters you've done, so why did you leave in 2006?
Well, my contract was up, so some years you're allowed to stay beyond your contract, but that year they were trying to cull the herd. No, they were trying to make the cast smaller, so when it was me, Horatio, and Parnell, our contracts were up. But I was either going to go that year or the following year, because you don't really want to stay beyond and kind of burn out on it anyway, so...
I encountered this quotation. Uh-oh. Actually, it's not a quotation from you. It's from a description in Publisher's Marketplace that says the only acting roles you get offered are obese lesbian secretaries.
It's true. It's true. After SNL, I was kind of shocked to find that in the eyes of Hollywood, I am 100 pounds or more than I am in real life. I am about 20 years or more older than I am in real life. And I'm definitely a lesbian all the time. So that's like the only parts. It was kind of... became a joke because my agent would send me a script and it'd be like, oh, okay, and I'd start to flip through and then it'd be like, an obese lesbian enters the room. I was like, yep, there it is. I was sort of, you know, had a rude awakening about who I am to Hollywood. I mean, there's not much call for obese lesbians either, so things kind of slowed down after SNL.
Here's where I get all NPR serious on you.
Oh, okay, let me
for
get
a
NPR voice.
For a second. No, I'm feeling all self-conscious about how I talk. imagining I'm going to appear in a sketch someday. But, I mean, SNL has been such a springboard for people. I mean, obviously, your good friend Tina Fey and Amy Poehler, also from Massachusetts, they both have regular shows. Is that something that you had hoped would be your path after SNL? And
you can't see my tears on the radio, can you? You know, of course, like, you kind of imagine, like, SNL and then, you know, beyond, and you kind of think, well, you never quite know, because some people go really big and some people don't. You don't know, like, which one you're going to be. And so now I'm just sort of like the regular actor who, like, goes in on audition or, you know, has a voiceover here and there. Yeah, I definitely expected more.
Well, you thought you were going to have more. I mean, you left SNL in 2006, and soon after that you were supposed to work with Tina Fey as a main character on 30 Rock, right?
I was in the pilot, and then, as they say, when you lose the part, your agent calls you and says, they're going to go in a different direction.
Well, you were supposed to be Jenna Maroney.
I was supposed to be, yeah.
And so did they tell you why they decided to go in a different direction?
Well, they tell me, by the time you've been in acting for this long, like, you're kind of used to rejections over and over again. So the initial version of the show had a sketch show within it, and they were doing a lot of sketches in the pilot. Like, we would show the sketches. But then they decided that they didn't want to do the sketches in the show, and they wanted more of, like, an ingenue than a sketch player such as myself. And also, the character was kind of like a diva character, and it made sense to me, I guess, is what I'm saying. I wasn't too crushed about it, actually. I mean, of course, it would have been nice. Then Tina had the idea to have me do the little characters all throughout.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've got a clip of you doing one of those characters on 30 Rock. Here you are playing Barbara Walters, interviewing Jane Krakowski, the actress who actually did get the role of Jenna Maroney. So let's listen.
Your father, Werner, was a burger server in suburban Santa Barbara.
Yes, that's right.
When he spurned your mother, Werner, for a curly-haired surfer named Roberta, did that hurt her?
It was hard on all of us, yes.
Flag, Meg, Glick, Flag, Meg, 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 Tennis, Meg, Meg. Was it Meg, Meg, Flag?
I'll always be his little girl.
Glick.
Did you improv part of that?
No, it was written like that thing with tennis in there. It was all there for me, yeah. I'd like to say I did, but no. Gotta be honest here. This is NPR.
I wonder if you can tell me a little bit about the show that you're in, Celebrity Autobiography.
It's a show, I've been involved with it for probably over 2 years now, and it's created by Eugene Pack and Dale Rafel, and they just had this idea to take kind of cheesy celebrity autobiographies and just have other celebrities read them just pretty much straight up, and the results are hilarious. No, the books themselves were not written for comedy, but now with some time, or maybe not even with much time, but they're kind of inadvertently funny.
And whose autobiography have you read from?
I've done the Jonas Brothers, I've done Madonna, Ethel Merman. But my favorite one is, okay, so Burt Reynolds wrote an autobiography, and then Lonnie Anderson also wrote one. But little known fact, Burt Reynolds' secretary also wrote an autobiography. So, because everyone's doing this. So then they have this segment where all three of them are kind of telling the same story, sort of like he said, she said, and also she said. So I do the secretary, and that one's probably my favorite. But all the words are exactly as they're written. Like, we don't make anything up in terms of the actual words.
So, Rachel Dratch, what's so interesting about this, that you're doing this celebrity autobiography show right now, is that apparently you're writing your own memoir?
I don't use the word memoir because I feel like you have to be, like, 80 to write a memoir. But, no, I'm writing... that's a karma kickback because I'm writing a book that's autobiographical, hopefully funny stories. But anyway, yeah, so now I'm writing one of these, and I'm feeling very vulnerable, regardless of the show, just because I'm about to hand it in, and I'm like, oh my God, this is about to go out into the world, and I spill some inner thoughts in there. I hope it's not later read in our show for laughs. But
well, Rachel Dratch, it's been so much fun and so great talking with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks. This is NPR.
Rachel Dratch will be in Boston on Monday performing with an ensemble cast in Celebrity Autobiography. There's more information at our website, radioboston.org. And before we go today, we want to say goodbye to Jeremy Bernfeld. Jeremy has been our talented and very good-natured web producer, playing a major role in the development of WBUR.org and RadioBoston.org. He's following his heart and joining an exciting new public radio reporting project in Kansas called Harvest Public Media. He'll be reporting on agriculture, climate change, and energy use.
Sounds like a great gig, Jeremy, even if we're very sad to see you go. Many thanks for all your help developing our website and for guiding us into the brave new world of social media, tweets, and Facebook postings. Good luck, and know that you will be much missed by all of us at Radio Boston.
Come back and see us soon, Jeremy. Radio Boston is a production of WBUR with regular contributions from The Angle at Boston.com. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. Have a great weekend, and join us again on Monday for more Radio Boston.